Welcome to the Original Recipe Group Big Book Step Study. Broadcasting from Newcastle, PA, every Monday night from 7 to 8:30 p.m. Eastern on Zoom.
My name's Steve. I'm an alcoholic. And I got to tell you, I'm humbled by the very fact that I'm here tonight with all of you. I'm humbled by the fact that I was asked. And I'm going to tell everybody on Zoom that coming down here, if you want the highest quality of hospitality, we have spent a wonderful weekend with TK and Diana, and there's no words for it. So I'm very, very humbled by that. The last thing is that I am in complete amazement, and I have the highest respect for everybody in this room, everybody on Zoom, for the very fact that you have the courage to come here and do something that not everybody can do. And this is truly an amazing, amazing process. And with that, I'm humbled by that, and I have the respect. So with that, I want to just get on with it and let you know that when I went through this process, and when I was an alcoholic, I was always asking the question, why? Why me? Why am I the way I am? And how did I pick up this addictive behavior? I was thinking back, you know what? It could have been the time when I snuck out of the house in the middle of the winter, and I ran down the street, and we were having it was a blizzard. Back then, in the 60s, we had anywhere from 30 to 40 inches of snow at a time. And I got hit by a snow truck, by a plow. Yes, I got rolled into the side, and I was covered in snow. And I laid there for like 2 or 3 hours crying out for help. And I finally wiggled my way out of all that stuff. I go into the house, and they were like, where were you? I told you to get in. And I said, well, I got hit by a snowplow, and I got stuck in the snow. And not one of them believed me at all. So I kind of copped a little resentment back then. I think the second time that maybe there was a problem with my drinking a little bit was the fact that I went to a football camp. And back then, for a high school football camp, you had to go way, way, way far away. And we went out to the outreaches of Maine into this little camp, and we practiced football in the middle of August in 100 degrees. And I was a freshman, and there was a thing called hazing back then. And I was not aware of the degree of hazing back in the 60s. And I was pursued like a fox going after a rabbit for like 4 nights straight with all these seniors hazing me. And I copped a serious resentment because of that. So that kind of led the way to my next big major thing was I didn't have the social skills to interact with young ladies. And that was a serious problem, because I was the one that was getting asked to the prom rather than me asking them to the prom. And my family made that quite a point of embarrassment. So what I'm trying to say is the whys. There were all these things that happened in my life, and I managed to stay away from alcohol until about 17. I used to get harassed because as freshmen in high school playing football, you know, we go down the river, have a six pack, and I would not partake. And then, you know, they'd go out to like this remote area after a game, and I would not really partake a lot. So I got harassed, and I got put down, and I felt a lot of less than then. But I kept my wits about me in a way where I stayed in school and did pretty well. But then something cracked. And right before I entered into college, my family, my dad goes, hey, let's go to Florida. And as one time, as one big family, we'll have a great time, and so on and so forth. So we all trucked down to Florida to visit my aunt. And my cousin had just gotten out of the Navy. And I'm like, aren't you about my age? He goes, yeah, I was only in there for 4 months. I go, what happened? He goes, oh, they threw me out because I had drugs. And I'm like, okay. He goes, hey, you want to go down to the park? So I went down to the park, and it was the first time that I have ever experienced these little cigarettes that you had to roll yourself. And when you smoked them, you felt really, really funny. And that was the first time. But then that was very soothing to me. And there were all kinds of things that went on during that trip, which sent my psyche and all my like self-esteem down into the lower levels. So that was one of the reasons why. So the things that I listed, there was those were the kind of like the whys. These are things that I could not process. These are things that I just didn't get a good handle on and how to get it going. And then from there, that's when the full-blown alcoholism just pulled in, because I had the benefit, believe it or not, of going to like a maritime academy. And guess what they do in the maritime? They like to go far, far away and in ships. And we went to different countries. And by then, you know, my alcoholism just got blown out, and I had to do what everybody else did. I had to do what the Romans did. And, I did it, and I did it in fine fashion. And they sometimes nicknamed the school that I went to, the Mass Maritime School of Drinking. And it was quite a thing. We caused a lot of trouble. I got into a lot of trouble. I got thrown out of the maritime. That was totally debilitating. I managed to get a lawyer and get back into the maritime just so that I could graduate. But I got thrown out for having a beer on a ship. And when I tell you they threw me out of school, they did it in a way where I don't think anybody else got thrown out the way I did. It was about 110 miles off the coast of Virginia, and the captain was so mad at me that he had requested a sea tug to come out and get me 110 miles out. And when the sea tug brought me back to land, I didn't know where I was, and he could care less, because he was just bothered by the fact that he had to go out and take me and throw me off the ship. So that in itself, another reason why I was having a lot of trouble. In the same vein, I used to be very good at being nice to people, and I would volunteer to be a designated driver, you know, for the guys at school, because, you know, we could go down to Providence, Rhode Island, and there was a little occasion where you can get $5 all you can drink, and it was amazing. So I used to do that. And I didn't think twice about having 3, 4, or 5 drinks, as long as I stayed under the limit that they had, which was about 10. And then next thing you know, I'm getting pulled over and I'm getting DUIs, but that didn't stop me at all. That didn't stop me. I didn't think twice about that. Back then, we didn't lose our license like we do now. And, I just went on my way. Those were kind of the things that really got me and turned me, a little sour on life and so on and so forth. I did manage to go and get away. I did manage to get into, the maritime part of the job. And I got to tell you that the things that I saw, the things that I did weren't, shall we say, of good moral character. That put me in a position where I really needed to get some help. And so those are some of the reasons why I had an addictive personality and I was an alcoholic. Now, when I was growing up, I was the oldest. I had parents that were 20 years old when they had me. So I'm 10 years old and I'm doing most of the chores in the house now, including the new babies and taking care of all the other 4 kids in our family. Not a problem with that. But the fact is that my parents were young. And when you have very young parents, they tend to be a little paranoid and a little nervous about things. And, you know, and we didn't live in very, what shall we call, well-to-do fashion. We were actually just below the poverty line, you know, with a three-bedroom apartment with five kids. So, you know, you do the math there and you'll see that the sleeping arrangements were just a little bit tight, just a tiny bit tight. But I managed to get through all that. I had to work my way through everything. I turned into an overachiever. I don't know if any of you guys out there are overachievers. But that is, that's like a double-edged sword because, you know, in order to get the attention that I needed, in order to get what I wanted, I had to step on a lot of toes and I pissed off a lot of people, because basically all I did was get what I wanted so that I could get ahead, so that I could get more money. Well, I finally hit the jackpot and, you know, I went out to sea and I made a ton of money, you know, the first 3 months. I think it's like today's equivalent of just under $90,000 in 3 months. But I made the rare mistake of taking all that money and sending it home. And I sent it home and I had just gotten married. So, and she wasn't too happy of the fact that I was out to sea because she was pregnant and had a couple of kids already. So, when I got home, the money was gone. And so that is one of the other reasons why I got like a serious resentment and very addictive. Why was the money gone? Well, I wanted to divorce right away. And my father pulled me aside and he said, hey, look, you know, you got to have a little bit of sympathy. You got to have a little bit of empathy, especially for somebody who's home all the time with the kids. So you got to let things go. And, you know, I really carried that resentment because I worked really hard for all that money and it was absolutely gone. So I was like starting all over again. And that really kind of set me back and it drove me into some serious alcoholism there. I had the fine idea of, you know, going and working on land. And I don't know about you people, but when people go from the sea, which is a whole different type of working environment, to a land-based job, it's a really hard transition. It's extremely hard because people don't react the same way on land as they do out at sea. And the work method is just a total different type of work method. And I had a hard time transitioning to that, a real hard time. And with that, I drank a lot again. And I remember crawling home at 6 o'clock at night, crawling up the steps, drunk out of my mind. And I got off at 3 o'clock. So I was working for a local utility. I was trying to do things that I had no knowledge about. And it was just one big fireball employment day after day after day after day. So I stopped drinking, but there was a double-edged sword with that. I didn't get any help at all. Nothing, nothing. I said, I'm going to stop on my own. In fact, I pulled what they call a Forrest Gump. If you guys have ever seen that, Forrest Gump, all he did was run. And that's all I did. I just ran. I managed to save enough money to build a house. That was great. But what had happened is there was too much damage done in my marriage. I treated them like little military, you know, cadets. I was starting to get this feeling of loneliness, and I was in the middle of all this busyness all the time, but I was lonely and I was isolated and I couldn't put my finger on it. I didn't know what was wrong. I don't know if any of you felt that way, but I mean, I could be in the middle of Wall Street during the day while they're trading on the floor and I would be lonely, and it was a horrible feeling and I didn't know what to do. And then finally, I had what they call, you know, a reality moment. And the reality moments are these things that all of a sudden hit you. You could be walking down the street and all of a sudden you get hit with, who am I? What am I doing here? What's my purpose in life? What is this all about? You know, and that I got hit with a reality moment. My reality moment came in, you know, in the form of pain, extreme pain. I was out doing my Forrest Gump thing. And I had snapped my ankle in a hole. And I one stepped it back to my car, which was, you know, like a quarter of a mile away. I pulled into a local hospital emergency room and I was in a wheelchair. The nurse went down to untie my shoe and I flatlined right there. Flatline. They code red or whatever it is. And they pulled, put me on a gurney and whatever. And I remember coming to a nurse right next to me. And she was crying. She was crying profusely. And I was like, what's going on? What, and my chest hurt. And they said, well, you know, they did they put the thing in the chest, the needle, back in the old days, I guess, the needle in the chest. And, you know, they brought you back. And, but you were talking while they were doing that. And I go, what was I talking? And she said, you were talking in this language, they like Aramaic or whatever it was. And I'm, whoa. So I didn't believe her, but come to find out, I looked her up and she had been in the local, you know, there's a place called the La Salette. And so she kind of understood what it was going on. I didn't take that clue. That was my reality moment. That was the shot. That was it. And it was like, I didn't act on it. I went forward, kept going and kept working. Got another job and worked in, you know, I started to build up some money, but I still was not happy. I was not happy. I had this big, beautiful house. I had three kids. I was coaching all the locals. I was doing all this great stuff, you know, in the community. But at home, I didn't like going home, you know, because I had to face somebody who had a serious resentment against me. I had to face somebody who I had a serious resentment against. I still didn't forget about that $90,000 that was spent. I carried that for like 20 years. And then I couldn't put it all together. And so finally I said, hey, you know what? You know what? I got this great job where I'm working nights, 12 hours, you know, overnights from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. It was fantastic. I was checked out perfectly. You know, I didn't have a lot of responsibility, but then it snuck back. I remember going into a restaurant one day and ordering a cranberry juice and somebody put vodka in it. I drank it down and I said, I'm okay. I can do this. And this was after 12 years of not drinking at all. Unbelievable. And I'm like, okay. So then it turned into like 007, the spy, you know, James Bond. I had to keep it away from everybody. I didn't want anybody to know that I was a drink, a sneaky little drink. Luckily, my family, like a military camp, they were in bed by 9 o'clock every night. And I would sneak down into the cellar and I would do the real hot stuff now, you know, the apple cider, the Mike's lemonade, the lemonade, all those little, what they call beach drinks. And I would consume probably a 6-pack of that. So that just, I kept doing that until finally one day I hit it hard. I thought the family was not going to be home. And I came home and they were all there. And it was like, whoa, what do I do now? So just to get them off my back, I promised them, all right, I'll go to an AA meeting just to get him off my back, because I'm like, okay, you know, who are you to tell me what to do? And I was kind of full blown at the time. And I said, all right, I walked into an AA meeting and the rest is history. You know, I walked into what they call the wrong meeting. And it happened to be in Attleboro and it happened to be on a Wednesday night. And it happened to be at 118 South Main Street. It was a Wesleyan church. And they did something a little different that I was not used to. And I remember getting tapped on the shoulder by this little guy, you know, with big blue eyes. And he gave me a book. He said, hey, read along. When they call you, you know, read along. And then next thing you know, he taps me about a half hour later and says, hey, what do you think of this? And I said, well, it's a lot of work. It's a little strict, you know, He goes, yeah, I know. He goes, well, we're not telling you to come back or whatever, but you know, it's not for everybody. It's not for everybody. And he was messing with me. I think he said, you know, when he said that, I was like, oh yeah, I can do this. Yeah, I can definitely do this. Yeah. And little did I know that thing right there, that just changed my whole life. You know, it just changed my whole life. That loneliness that I talked about disappeared, because I don't know about you, but if a normal person walks into a room like this with people like you in this room, how can they not feel good about themselves? Seriously, because there's not a person in here that doesn't have a warm smile on their face, that hands are outstretched. And even you might even get a couple of hugs too, you know. So that loneliness just went away. The other thing that went away too, the wounds that I talked about when I was growing up. Well, guess what? They didn't heal clean. They did not heal clean. It's like when you cut your leg on a barbed wire. We used to go through barbed wire like, you know, like soldiers to get into the cow fields late at night, because we used to get a kick out of pushing them over while they were sleeping, standing up. I know that's not nice, but that's what we were like when we were kids. But I, you know, you get a cut and the cut wouldn't go away. You know, the scab would just keep coming, and the scab would come in a different form. That's kind of what my life was like. The wounds just did not heal clean. But it wasn't until I walked into places like this, just like this, that now these wounds started to heal. And why did they heal? Because I used to hear how other people got wounded and what they did with their wounds and how they helped, what they did to get those wounds squared away. And it was just amazing. It was amazing type of thing. I can't really describe the severity of help that I got by just being there. I mean, I walked into a meeting sometimes and I would just stare at a wall. And it was okay. It was okay. But it was something that I've never, ever done before. And I slowed everything down and I saw all the wounds. And I saw that now I'm in a place where I can heal. And it was just a fabulous place. I can't say enough about this fellowship. I hope I haven't gone over the time limit. But I can tell you that the feelings that I got just this weekend, seeing old friends, these two, and hanging out with them, and the emotionality that I felt with that. I mean, if you read this book, it tells you about shipmates. And it tells you about, I've been in shipwrecks, and the people in my ship, I still am with today. There's three of them that I am so close to. I was just telling Cindy, fabulous new wife. I was just telling Cindy that I'm going to go visit this guy who lives in Wellfleet. And there's a guy like right over the line over here that was one of my mates. But that feeling that you get with people, you know, she calls it man love, you know, bro love, whatever it is. But it's nothing bad. It's just that feeling that you get with certain people that you will do anything for, like anything. Oh, you want to go to Reno? I'll drive you. You want to go here? I'll take you there. Because my sponsor, believe it or not, I remember, he took my second sponsor. He flew him down to Jacksonville. He waited 2 weeks, and he waited until a liver was available so this guy could get a liver. And then he brought him back and he nursed him back to health. That was my sponsor. So I had a high bar for examples. And why did he do it? Because. He walked in the room like this. I'm Steve and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you.